Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Third hour. What's happening? Tiki and Tierney Company from the Tiki and Tierney Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. These are challenging times, and Rocket Mortgage is prepared to help. So if you need mortgage assistance, contact their team 24/7 at rocketmortgage.com. From their home to yours, the team at Rocket Mortgage is with you. Hope everybody's doing well here on this Wednesday around the country. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio and CBS Sports Network Radio.com. All right, so let's do some baseball here, Teek. There's two issues at play. One would be the great article in the New York Post today about this blossoming war between the union and the owners based on an email from one of MLB's top lawyers, the players' union, back to, representing ownership. Back and forth that was uncovered late March was the initial negotiation, and then this email actually circled back to clear up some questions, and it actually makes somebody look really bad. We'll get to that. But the other thing, and this was from Tom Glavin, who was the president of the union back when the World Series was canceled back in 94. He said what I've always said. He wrote a pretty compelling piece for The Athletic here, and he hit a multitude of issues. Very well-written piece. Good stuff from a guy who's been in this position and is not afraid to speak his mind, but is smart. He gets it. Loves baseball. I think that, the owners will use the players as leverage pawns here as much as they can. And the players might try to do the same to the owners. Matter of fact, they probably will, but it won't be nearly as effective because at the end of the day, fans don't care that much about owners. They care about owners if they live in a city and their owner is cheap and he doesn't spend money to get free agents or keep their top players. They care about ownership when they don't spend money to retain their own players. They care about ownership when there's a thought that they might, take their team, pack up shop, and leave markets, or they try to get a stadium built and they want the taxpayers to get left with the monster bill. That's when they really care about owners. But fans care about the names on the back and the logos on the top of the hat. So if this thing goes sideways, like what Glavin said, I've been saying for a while, the players will look bad and feel the wrath. Not as much on the owners.
Yeah, it's a shame, too, because they're just trying to keep their piece of the pie as it's been collectively bargained. And I think anybody would understand that. But I think we as a nation, we don't want to hear it. Like, it's okay if this is happening behind closed doors. The problem is it's not. And when we talked to Trevor Bauer last week, one of the things that he brought up was that this is all being negotiated in the public eye. And the players have no way to look good. Asking for what they're due doesn't look good to them because of the millions of dollars that they make. Now, some of them aren't making millions of dollars. Some of them are making league minimum. And in fact, a lot of the stars are making league minimum right now. But the idea or the perception is that Major League Baseball players are millionaires arguing with billionaires. And so they look petty. Even though it's not the case at all. It's a shame because they're all going to lose. But if they all lose, the owners lose less because, as you said, BT, we don't know their names. Some of them you do.
A couple of them.
But most of them you don't. And you're mad at them anyways. If they're not winning a championship, you're mad at them anyways. You're not doing enough, XYZ owner, to get us a championship. You didn't upgrade the ballpark or whatever. Like, you let this guy walk in free agency or you traded this guy. We hate you anyway. So, they lose. They all lose. But the owners lose significantly less.
Yeah, bottom line is this. You know, you reach into your pocket, you pull out your credit card, you get tickets to go and see certain players, not to watch an owner sit in his box if he's even there.
That's
a lot
right.
of the owners don't even go to the games. I mean, they'll show up for the big games, whatever. Mm-hmm. Some are more visible. The Cuban's visible.
Yeah.
Steinbrenner was visible. You know, there's certain owners that are visible. Some aren't. So here's a quote from Glavin. If it were to come down to an economic issue, and that's the reason baseball doesn't come back, you're looking at a situation similar to the strike of 94 and 95 as far as fans are concerned. Even if players were 100% justified in what they were complaining about, they're still going to look bad.
Hmm.
And he is 1,000% right, which gets us to this year. And this is has been deemed kind of a smoking gun. Basically, the New York Post, great journalism here, they obtained a March 26th email from a Major League Baseball lawyer to top league officials that documents the substance of the talks between the two officials and obviously the MLBPA officials from earlier that morning. Now, and there was, I guess, somebody circled back. They were pursuing clarity on the union side. And what transpired in the return email is being positioned as strong evidence or a smoking gun that the baseball, you know, that the players' union is basically either reneging or playing dumb to, you know, try to drum up some support in the court of public opinion. Because think about this. When they agreed on the salary structure, this was back in March, and you know, nobody knew about stadiums with no fans in them. This was still very early. So Major League Baseball, and this is where I'm with the owners on this. I mean, come on, even though they are billionaires versus millionaires, you still have to understand the changing waters. And if a turnstile doesn't flip the entire season, and there was dialogue and there was, you know, things that were planted in that initial conversation back in late March that, you know, foreshadowed a return to the negotiating table if things change, if there's a dire shift, and this would certainly equate to that. You know, as much as I back the players historically, I'd have a rough time saying that the owners are wrong here to try to, at least for a one-year solution, a one-year Band-Aid, to get back to the table and try to come up with something that's a little more equitable.
Yeah, I think it's being positioned by the union, the Major League Baseball Players Association, that the idea of not playing with fans was not their problem. It was positioned as this is the owner's problem. This downside risk of not being able to play with fans is not our as players' problem. We are guaranteed a certain amount of revenue based on the number of games that we play. And how I understand it is, if we play half of our season, then we're going to get half of our salaries. It's going to be a prorated, a portion of our salaries. And no matter what the revenue looks like, that's your problem, owners. But in reality, what actually was presented to the union was, if we are playing games without fans, that does not work for us. The MLB owners say specifically, this is what this email confirms, playing without fans does not economically work with us. And we subsequently have found out why, BT, because it's 40% of their revenue, they're saying.
About $4 billion they might
lose. Yep, that's a big, big number to not play without fans. They go on to say in this note, we would consider playing some games in empty stadiums if the players take lesser salaries for those specific games.
Yep.
And so it's clear that this wasn't like a done deal, like the negotiation wasn't finished. The other big part of this, BT, was the 50-50 revenue split going forward. Interestingly, in their conversations, what's happened about a week ago, or not even maybe less than a week ago, it wasn't even brought up. It wasn't presented to the owners in that regard. But since that last meeting, they've been silent, man. Neither one of these sides are negotiating right now. They both don't want to, as the article says, flinch on the economics here and give something away, which they don't necessarily want to give away, which ultimately is going to lead to the nuclear option, which is no baseball.
No baseball.
Which is not going to be good for anybody.
That's the scenario that would change and redirect the ire of the fans. Because the only entity that has the power to pull the plug on the season will be ownership. But not, I mean, listen, if there's a player revolt that they don't feel safe, if they don't agree to the conditions, they don't show up, they could do the same thing. But if the owners said, you know what, all right, you don't want to do a 50-50 split, you don't want to agree to a lesser salary based on half the season and nobody in the building at a loss of a projected $4 billion in in gains here. Well, you know what? It's not worth us. It's not worth our economic time.
That's right.
To even try to throw a pitch. So we're pulling the plug.
Yeah.
If they ever did that, there is no.
What do you think that can happen? Because it feels like that's where it's headed.
That's not happening.
I don't think it's going to happen, but it feels like that's where it's headed. If things get contentious, and they're not, I mean.
No way. No
way. They're a little contentious right now, but if they get more contentious.
And they
will. Do you think? I know, of course it does. Do you think that could potentially happen?
No, that's not an option. No, that's not an option. There's no way. You can't. If they ever did that.
I don't see the players flinching, though, BT. I really
players
don't.
Players will flinch. Players will flinch.
But
maybe the owners will flinch a little bit as well.
I can't even justify it. Like, if I'm a player and I'm looking at, you know, the value. And again, this is a temporary loss. They're going to operate at a temporary loss. I mean, hell, the owners can apply for loans from Major League Baseball if they need to. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because their credit rating is so high. So the owners have a recourse here to cover losses. The players, like if they agree to something that significantly curtails their amount of income and the circumstances of their career, that's their last paycheck, or you know who knows what it is, or they don't get a service year, or whatever it may be, it affects them significantly more than it affects a billionaire owner who can borrow against the value of his franchise, which is when we talked to Scott Boras, have skyrocketed over the last decade or so.
Yep.
So I think there's more room for the owners to move than there are for the players. And so as a result, the players have the right, and this is why I think you're starting to hear them be so loud, the right to be upset. Because their CBA doesn't call for them to share in the losses right now. But the owners are trying to force them to share in the loss, and that's not right.
Well, I'm not saying it's right, but that's not what you asked me. You know, is there a chance that the players flinch or that this nuclear button is hit? No, there's no way this is going to happen. I mean, listen, I remember last year, I was sitting in my hotel in Philly, and it was the first Big Three game that I did. Big Three season canceled, by the way, which sucks. I was looking forward to doing that. They just announced that the other day. They're going to come back in 2021. But I'm in Philly, and I was getting ready to go down, you know, and meet some of the people, league officials. I just got into the hotel, and I'm watching the Yankees and the Red Sox. They're playing in London. That was the weekend they played, right? And I say that because that reference is important. That entry into London, which was very, which I didn't like because, for whatever.
You're stealing a rivalry game from. It doesn't matter where it was, whether it was in the Bronx or up in Fenway. You're stealing a rivalry game.
Correct. Take the White Sox and the Blue Jays. There's going to be 50,000 people out of sheer intrigue anyway. They'll show up. You don't need to give the Yankees and the Red Sox.
You're right. And you're only going to miss out on like 15,000 at home, wherever it happened to be.
Correct. And I'm sitting there saying, wow, man, this thing's really happening. And it was the pomp and circumstance was just bleeding through the TV. The economic boom was highly quantifiable and advantageous to the league. I say this because, you know, baseball is in a great position. And everybody that plays the game knows that. You mentioned the article or the interview, I should say, that we had with Scott the other day. And you know, the valuation of all these franchises. Yeah, listen, the Oakland A's are worth over $1 billion. They play in a dump. The Tampa Rays are worth over, barely, but they're worth over $1 billion. Same as the A's, barely. They play in a relative dump, worth over $1 billion. I mean, there's money flying everywhere. Items are flying off the shelf. People are, I know that, again, on the national level, I'm not saying it's the NFL, but trust me, I implore you to just go and do some research if you don't believe me, whether it's the local networks. I don't have enough time to do it on the show now. The local networks, whether it's the merchandise, whatever it is, the revenue stream for the game in totality, baseball is flourishing. And there's not a thing that's nebulous about that. Baseball's printing money. Baseball is young. Baseball is fast. Baseball is explosive. Baseball is looking into expansion. Mm-hmm. Stateside, it's already done so. Worldside, as I just mentioned with the UK. They'd be morons to mess around with this recipe, which is their secret sauce that's been elusive for a little bit. So if you ask me, does anybody reach for the nuclear button? There's no chance. There's going to be baseball unless the government says we can't. They're going to play. And I believe the players will crack more than the owners because the owners – I mean, it's the old – listen, I'm going to take something from the Jordan documentary, right? If you've got billions – I mean, hundreds of millions. He's a single billionaire trending toward two, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he's trending toward $2 billion, but he's got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of million dollars at his disposal, right? Not all liquid, clearly, but if he needs it, he's got it. Now, if Michael Jordan's losing $1.9 million at the blackjack table, he didn't even sweat. Now, he's pissed because he's competitive, and he's probably chomping on that cigar because he just doesn't like losing at anything. But if there's somebody else in that room who is maybe only worth $2 million in totality but was allowed in the high-stakes game, and he's losing the same, his whole life is flashing before his eyes.
Yep.
And the difference is that Jordan can ride it out. He could ride it out. He could stay there till 7 in the morning, have 8 cups of coffee, just keep getting the chips, the write-up. Yep, it's a lot of credit. Yep, Mr. Jordan, you're good for it. Yep, give me the chips. And I'm going to play until I eventually get my money back. The other guy does that. The line of credit eventually stops. He might be $7 million in the hole, and he's dead. He's financially dead. He's ruined.
Yep.
And the players are the equivalent of the guy who knows that there are limits to going for it. And they know their limits more than owners because owners have fewer limits. That's the difference.
That's right.
You know, so they're playing as long as the government says we can. And I think that there will be some. Now, when you say, well, the player, I think eventually the owners might flinch. I'm not saying the owners will be flinchless. What I am saying is that the players flinch will be a bit more pronounced, I believe, than the owners. I think. We'll see. All right. Well, baseball, it's coming. It's coming. All right, Teague, this should be good. We've got Doug Whaley coming up next. He was the former Bills GM. And the Bills, listen, if somebody's going to unseat the Pats, and somebody's going to, it's going to be the Bills. And it's going to be the Bills. I mean, the Dolphins aren't ready. The Jets aren't ready. The Bills are, I believe, a blossoming AFC power. That's how much I think of their program. I think they're that good. A lot of it depends on Josh and becoming a little more accurate. But everything else is there. So we'll talk to their former GM. We'll get to that. Next, right here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free lines, 1-855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Geico's introduced the Geico Give Back. It's a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. That'll last your full policy term. Good. Visit geico.com/giveback for info and eligibility. If you wanted to jump in, great conversation today. Paul Pierce's take on LeBron not being a top five all-time. Paul. Get out of quarantine, dude. Get out of quarantine. But that was a great start to the show. If you wanted to get us on Twitter, whether you agreed with that assertion, disagreed, which is probably more likely, hit us on Twitter at Tiki and Tierney, at Tiki Barber, at Brandon Tierney. Some good stuff with baseball, Tom Glavine's comments, the union, smoke and gun email between the lawyers with MLB. A lot of stuff happening. And, of course, the thawing and the break in the ability now for athletes, at least of the revenue-generating sports, college football, college basketball, both men's and women, to get back on campus in June to begin non-formal, or I should say informal workouts. Good stuff. All right, Teak, let's talk about the I hate that this team is in my division. I hate it because they're going to be good for a while. I feel it. I sense it. But I do feel joy for the long-suffering Bills fans. And we're joined by their former GM, Doug Whaley, who is with us here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Bills are coming. Doug, Tiki and Tierney, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. How you guys doing?
We're doing well. I'll tell you, you feel the momentum, right? The Pats going down, the Bills going up. It just listen, the Dolphins are coming there, the Jets are coming as well, but it just seems like if there's ever a year to break this hex, I mean, I don't want to say they have to win the division, but they kind of have to win the division, don't you think?
I have to say this way. The pressure's on because Big Brother has left the house and he's in college now, so the middle son has to step up. And I tell you this much, I have total faith in Coach McDermott because when we hired him while I was there, we knew he would always have his team in position to win. With that said, they will go as far as the quarterback goes. If he progresses and takes another step like he did last year,
yep,
they have to be the brand of favorites to win that division.
Doug, I just want to follow up quickly, Teague, because you talk about the process with McDermott, and you said that you knew right away he would always put you in a position to win. What was the overwhelming confidence factor that led you to look at him and view him that way? Why did you feel that way early with Doug, with McDermott?
He had a plan, and he came across as his plan, if he followed it step by step, and the preparation he will have for everyone in the building, not only his players, but his coaches, his personnel staff, and this the momentum that he's going to build in that building, we knew it was going to have everybody be accountable for their actions.
Yeah, no, and that's a plan for success. You got to have one, and otherwise you get to the point where you need to execute something and you can't. You know, Doug, we talk about the New England Patriots and them potentially taking a step back this year because Tom Brady is gone, and it just feels like they're vulnerable, more vulnerable than ever. But you know, let me take you back to when you were there and even before. It just felt so dominant for them for so long. As you guys would go into every season, I know how we on the outside would look at it, and in a cynical fashion. Is the Pats division, they're going to win, you know, every division game, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How did you guys look at the Pats dynasty and their dominance over all those years?
If we looked at it as their chance. They have established just something that was unprecedented at the time and will be hard to repeat, especially at the way the NFL system is now. But we always said, we have to play a perfect game. We cannot make mistakes because Coach Belichick was the master of he would never have a system. He would exploit your weaknesses. So we had to make sure our weaknesses were not exploited, and it's hard to do. A lot of coaches go in with a system. Now, if you watch New England throughout the years and throughout a season, one week they would throw it 50 times.
Yep.
But if they're playing a team that has a bad run defense, they would run it 50 times. So as multiple as they were, it made it very tough to beat them unless you were on top of your game in every aspect.
You know, one of the reasons I think they were able to do that, Doug, was because of how they drafted or how they moved pieces around. Like, they never paid anybody. I mean, hell, they didn't even pay Tom Brady, and he was one of the best players in the league for a long time, making 15 while others are making close to 30. You know, like, that side of the business, like the managing the personnel side of the business, why have they been able to be so ahead of everybody else at that? Because that's what it feels like to us. They're ahead of everybody. How is that possible?
I'll give you a story. I was we signed Chad Brown back when I was with Pittsburgh as a pro coordinator, and he was just coming from New England. And I asked him, I said, what is the difference? And he said, in Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh drafts better players, but New England puts such an emphasis on intelligence because every week you would be given a different game plan. It wasn't we installed this in preseason, and we're going to build off of it. It was, this is how we're going to attack them. So you needed to be an intelligent player, and he would always have you learn one certain position and one certain responsibility, and you needed to perfect it. So his mastery of being able to exploit people's weaknesses and having the players that had the intelligence to be able to adapt every week to a new system, that's why they were and they are right now still just a step above everybody else.
So we're talking to Doug Whaley, former GM of the Buffalo Bills. Was there a bunch of years, but was the GM from 2010 through 2013 with us here, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Doug, I want to get back to something that you said before, really when I started the interview talking about my expectation for the Bills the next couple of years, and you slipped it in there, and as you well should, provided the quarterback continues to mature. I'm sold about and on a lot of things about the Buffalo Bills. I am not sold on Josh Allen. Do I need to be more sold? You know, we could all look at the numbers and say, well, sub 60%. We all know the numbers. But am I off base when I sit here and I say, as much as I love what they're doing as a team, he's the main component, and I'm still not sure if he's going to be what Bills fans need him to be. Am I wrong?
You're not off base. Not at all. Well, there's two reasons why. One is the accuracy component. That is still a question mark with him. And then the second reason I say that is when crunch time comes, think about the playoff game against Houston. In the fourth quarter, and when they needed him most, he had the yips. He can get over that. He can get more experience. Now that he's been in that situation before, he can calm down and maybe make that step. But that is, there are two question marks out there, and you're not off base.
But here's the thing, Doug. Interesting. I kind of expected you might say that. But now, to get rid of the yips or to refine his game, maybe more specifically, now he can't really do it anonymously. Now it's like, okay, you know, I host a radio show nationally, 140 stations. I'm on TV. I'm telling the whole sports world, Bills are supposed to win the division. So I don't know if he can relax. If anything, I could say the pressure is amped up because now everybody expects the Bills to be good and they expect him to get better. And that's a different stage to navigate, you know?
No doubt. There's a target on the Bills' back, and especially Josh Allen. But the good ones and the great ones expect that pressure and thrive in it. He was exposed to it last year. He understands what that situation entails. Now he can take that, process it, and next time he's in there, in that position, hopefully he does the opposite of what he did last time. So experience is the best teacher.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think you're right. Doug, let's shift for a second and more on the operational sides of this. You were one of the few black general managers in the NFL. Now, we talk a lot about the Rooney Rule and how it affects coaches, and we kind of feel what the pipeline is for black coaches in the NFL. What is it for black general managers in the NFL?
It's an interesting process because a lot of personnel men do not have agents to get their names out there, like coaches do. So the agents can put people's names in national media's mouthpiece so they can get out there and get exposure. Mm-hmm. It's a little difficult on the personnel side. You have to be on a team that has sustained success and has drafted and signed great free agents. So it's a little harder to get exposed that way. And I think one of the keys for any hiring, but especially minority hiring, is exposure. And then after exposure, it's preparation. So when you get that interview, you are prepared to be able to knock it out of the ballpark.
Is it harder as a general manager, you know, once you're in the role? It's like, as a coach, you see it right away. It's like, dude, can this guy coach? Can he lead men? For a general manager, it's more downstream. And I think back to Jerry Reese. He worked his way when I was with the Giants. He was a scout, and he was one of the really good scouts in football. And then he got the general manager job. He had immediate, quick success because they won a championship, and he drafted really well that first year. And then it kind of started to fall apart a little bit. Like, how do you maintain the position as an African-American? Because it seems like it's harder to do.
It's such a subjective business, it's hard. But when it comes down to it, it becomes wins and losses. Hmm. And what is the most difficult part of that job is there are so many variables. You got to think about it. You're talking about 53 active players, 10 practice squad players, 20 to 30 coaches, and all the variables that go along with that many people. They have to be in sync and hitting on all cylinders for you to have success. So what I've noticed, and when I was in that seat, I came up as a personnel person. So scouting. But when you get in that seat, it's more about managing. Mm-hmm. Managing situations, managing people, and managing distractions. And that is something that it's just tough. And I give credit to all the general managers that have success. And because it's just not an easy job.
Forget you being a minority. Did you enjoy it?
I did. The problem is that the wins become relief and the losses just become so disheartening and they take longer and longer to get over. But the idea of being able to assemble a team and be out there and get a victory and progress to hopefully a championship, it's just something that you just can't put into words.
That's got to be awesome. When you win, it's got to be phenomenal. Doug, I've got one more for you, and I am curious how you answer this. Not an easy one, all right? Going to put you back in a GM chair, but there's a few caveats. You are a GM in the AFC East, all right? And you've got – so I'm going to take the Pats out of it because I don't think they have a desirable quarterback situation right now at all. And you're going to tie your future to one of the three names, Tua, Darnold, or Allen. Who is Doug Whaley saying, you know what, that's the kid I believe in the most, and that's the guy that I'm riding with? Who would you pick?
Ooh, that's a very good question. Right now, from my position, I would say Tua. And I'll tell you why.
Go ahead.
Here's interesting. Why. Allen would be a close second.
Okay.
Because if you think about it, the NFL used to be the gold standard in the football ecosystem, and it was a trickle-down effect. They would set all the trends. It has flipped. it is a trickle-up effect from the college now.
Mm-hmm.
Think about the coaches that are getting hired now. Right. Even Andy Reid and his offensive system, if you look at it, it mimics or there's a lot of similarity to a lot of college systems. With Tua coming in and that type of system starting to have some prevalence and effectiveness, along with his accuracy, his mobility, and as long as he stays healthy, right now I would have to say, even though he hasn't played it down in the NFL, if I was a betting man, I'd throw my chips on Tua.
That's interesting. So you said Tua, Josh Allen, Darnold third. 1, 2, 3?
Yes.
Okay. Great answer, man.
And I tell you this much. You're talking 1 and 1A. And Josh has done it before, and he's done it at a high level, and he's got to take that next step. The only reason right now is Tua has done it and performed in the big game and came out ahead. Josh hasn't done that yet.
I got you. Listen, this was really good. I know that we enjoyed it. I know our listeners enjoyed it. Let's get you back on the show at some point, maybe throughout the season. Doug Whaley, good spot today, man. Good. Very good.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, fellas. Look forward to coming back on.
You got it.
Take care, Doug.
There you go. No ducking tough questions, honest answers. That's how you do an interview. Good job, Doug. Boy.
Yeah, we share an agent, too, now. He's a LEP guy.
What?
Doug Whaley. Yeah, he's a LEP guy.
Oh, now I know we're going to get him.
Exactly.
Now it's easy. I thought I had to finesse him a little bit by propping him up. Now he's in the bag. He's in the family?
Yep, he's in the family.
That is hysterical. He was really good. I don't, not that it matters. I do not agree with his answer of Tua, Allen, Darnold. Do you agree with that order?
I like Tua, but I can't put him number one if he hasn't played a snap yet.
Fair enough. In the
National Football
Fair
League.
Fair enough. Yep.
But the problem is I have no idea what to expect from Sam Darnold, because you know what my issues are. It's the interception percentage, which is too high. Mm-hmm. But who the hell's he been throwing the football to? At least Josh Allen has had a great defense behind him, and he's been allowed to be athletic and use his legs, and that's how he's won. He's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. It's impossible to judge. It's an impossible question right now.
Not an easy answer. That's why I asked him. All right, let's get the update for Mac. We'll come back. The blast is around the corner. It was really good. Doug Whaley was money. Tiki and Tierney. Here's Zach coming at you right now.
All righty. Good stuff today. Really good show. Doug Whaley was terrific. Let's crank out our Ask the Pros. Let's answer it. Brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. And today's question coming in from, Eric Rolin at E-R-U-T-L. Appreciate the question there, Eric. And Eric wants to know, which ESPN 30 for 30 would you most be interested in seeing from the NBA and why? Little Shaq and Kobe, big three on the Miami Heat, or the Warriors dynasty? Go ahead, Teak. What do you think?
I'd probably go the Warriors dynasty. I didn't feel good after finishing watching the MJ documentary. Kind of got contentious, and there's hate being flowing from it. I think that the Warriors dynasty has a lot more cohesion behind it.
Well, not if you incorporate the Draymond Green stuff. That's how it ended.
It would end
the same way as the Jordan stuff.
But it was quiet. It wasn't loud. It wasn't bothersome. I don't think. I mean, after the fact, it was. But I think in real time, if you are watching it, I think it probably wasn't as bad as it seemed. Maybe there's that one dust up at the beginning of the season, but it kind of felt like it slipped away.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts, all your car care needs, guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. Three really good options. I mean, you know, the way I look at it, we've done so much on Shaq and Kobe, and that's always fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
But without Kobe around, that's, you know, that would be different.
You lose a lot of contextualization without his opinion.
And you know he would keep it real.
Yep.
We know that. The big three on the Heat, you know, I think it has never been – it's referenced a lot. Well, they were 9-8 under Spoelstra for the first year. They came out of the gate playing very pedestrian basketball. But it's never really been documented. Like, I'd like to see, you know, how receptive – if you could actually accrue this footage and implement it. Like, was LeBron fully receptive of Spoelstra at first? The thing that's interesting to me, too, and this has been talked about – is that when D-Wade implored him to take over the team, like, stop deferring, you're the best player on the court, start acting like it in so many words. And D-Wade willingly took a secondary role to step back. That would be interesting. But, yeah, I'd probably go the Warriors because they were down for so long. You know, they had the moment when they upset the Mavericks. Yeah, that was a great team. Steven Jackson, those guys. Baron Davis, great moment at least. Mm-hmm. But the fans and even switching from the East Bay into San Francisco, from Oracle to Chase Center, there's a lot there. Mark Jackson, if you could probe into that, you know, because, you know, that was a strange occurrence there. He did well, and then he was gone.
Yeah, he's still not a head coach. Hasn't really got another opportunity.
He has not been offered any job. The recruitment trip out to the Hamptons, the Hamptons Five. There's a lot of meat with that Warrior stuff. I would like this to be 10 years down the road. So I don't want to say that it's embellished, but we can romanticize it a bit more, have 10 years perspective and kind of see what happens from that point. But I agree. I would say the Warriors too. All right, Teak, that was a long way of agreeing with you. Are you ready for the blast here, Teak?
Yep, let's go.
Let's go.
So many topics, so little time. We give you 5 stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for the blast with Tiki and Tierney.
Adam Thielen, wideout for the Vikes, told ESPN yesterday that he's looking forward to playing the role of mentor next season with Minnesota's young wideout and their core. Justin Jefferson was drafted there. He's going to be phenomenal. Are Minnesota's receivers too young to have a big season?
I don't think so. I don't know if you can be too young. I mean, Kyle Rudolph is also still there. Notre Dame alum. Mm-hmm. He's really good, obviously, we know, at tight end. Justin Jefferson, he's a fourth year at LSU, Justin Jefferson. I can't remember, but he feels like he's veteran enough. I don't think they're too young to have a big year. And again, it all depends on Kirk Cousins and how they balance this offense. So I'm going to say no. I don't think it is.
Oh, I totally agree. You know, Kenny Galladay didn't look too young.
That's right.
Right? There's some younger. A.J. Brown didn't look too young bursting on the scene. Cortland Sutton, I know it's not his first year, but Cortland Sutton started really popping because DJ Shark is pretty young. Listen, the primary role, that would be a different story, but to assume the role of the secondary receiver with Thielen doing his thing, no, they're not too young. They're talented. They'll be fine. They're good. All right, Al Michaels, legendary broadcaster, told the New York Post yesterday that he would not be in favor of broadcasting NFL games from a remote location this season. Is it irresponsible for Michaels to say this? I don't know that it's irresponsible. You should probably swallow that opinion for now. You know, listen, I'd be disingenuous. Like, when LeBron first came out and said, you know, I'm not going to play if there's no fans in this, you know, back at the origin here of the pandemic.
Yeah.
Chastised him for that. You know, let it play out. And there's, you know, certain things. And I think I've got to hold out to the same standard for sure. If that's what is deemed safe and that is what's deemed required by the NFL, and whether it's government officials, however this is constructed, then Al Michaels is going to have to go and do it remotely. I mean, I'm not saying he doesn't have to love it, but he's got to do it to the best of his abilities.
Yeah, look, I've been in an NFL booth before a couple times, actually, over the last few years. Some with Fox and my brother last year with Beth Mowins. We did a Bengals game. It's just very different seeing it live than calling it on television. I know what he's saying. I wouldn't be in favor of it either, because you wouldn't feel it. Like, you don't feel the game. But if you have to call it from a remote location, I guess you have to call it from a remote location. I don't think I would enjoy it calling it from, because you're not there. You know,
no, it's incredibly, you're stuffed in a studio. There's no ambiance. I'm not saying it will be fun, but you still got to do your job, right?
Yeah, I mean, of course you do your job, but
let me see.
That would just be weird, man.
I want to see. You know what? I want to see the exact quote. I want to be fair to Al. I want to see the exact quote here, because I do like Al. He's a legend. All right. I would hate to think we would not be in the stadium and announce the games from some other location. That would not fly, as far as I am concerned. You have to be able to feel it, even without fans. Not the greatest response. Not horrible. Not horrible, but. Not perfect. All right, I mentioned this before. Unfortunately, the Big Three, which I've had a lot of fun doing, I had fun doing it last year, is not moving forward with the season this year. Obviously canceled, but plans to return for big ones in 2021. What improvements would we like to see the Big Three make with their season off? And don't say new broadcaster, Tiki.
No, I mean, you do a good job there.
That's fun, man.
Like, the format it's ideal. It's easy. It's family friendly.
Yep.
It's easily locatable. You can get to them. You're there for the whole, like, you see four games or whatever it is. It's like, I don't know. I mean, maybe you try to bring in younger talent, but they're doing that already. So I don't know. I don't know if there's anything that they could do to make it better.
Well, the things that I wanted to see, they were actually getting ready to implement this summer, because the way it was set up last year, you play on a Saturday and a Sunday, two totally different venues. Like, we might be in Detroit Saturday and in Wisconsin on Saturday, on Sunday. And now it's going to be totally different. And their goal was to make it kind of like a sports festival. You know how you have music festivals and
food like
festivals?
All weekend, like the whole weekend in one place.
It's going to be six straight games. So everybody's going to be at the venue, and there's going to be like, you know, hoops set up outside with music and food. And it just was going to be a cool, it was going to be a party. So they were going to make it more party, more all-inclusive. I think that's going to be a great tweak.
That's actually cool.
It is cool. And they worked hard to devise some new things that, unfortunately, we'll have to kick back until 2021. All right. How about this? This guy, Craig Feedy, however you say his name, the Utah resident, said he was the one who made Jordan's pizza before Game 6 of the Finals back in 98. And there was no way it was poisoned. Is there reasonable doubt to believe MJ wasn't suffering from the flu or bad pizza? Listen, I'm going to take him at his word. I mean, if you tell me Dennis Rodman's sitting there and he's got cotton mouth and he's dying because he was out all night, that's one thing. Michael Jordan was always ready to play. Michael Jordan wasn't doing drugs. Yeah, he liked to pop back a couple of scotches on the golf course. Who doesn't? Jordan was always ready. So whether it's the flu, whether it's pizza, I don't care. Because I know that it wasn't anything that he could have, or at least I believe, it was not preventable. It was not because he was irresponsible or unprofessional.
I mean, they're saying it's food poisoning, and it had to be food poisoning because he just ate the pizza. But maybe he did have a latent bug, and it just manifested itself, you know, a day later. Who knows, right? Yeah. I don't think, you really have to try to poison a Pizza Hut pizza.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean?
That's true.
Was it Pizza Hut? Whatever it was.
Yeah, I think it was. It was either Pizza Hut or it wasn't Little Caesar. I think it was Pizza Hut. I think it was.
I mean, you really have to try to do that. So.
But let me ask you a question. What is the urgency like? What do people think? All right, so they get to the bottom of this Michael Jordan sick game well. What the hell do they expect to find?
I have no idea.
Doing coke all night?
I mean, yeah, Michael Jordan, that's not the case. I don't know. That's a great question. I have no idea.
What's there? He was sick. Come on. You want to say he was embellished when Pippen was helping him? Ah, it's one thing. All right. Have a great Wednesday. Remain safe, sensible, and sane. Teak, I'll see you tomorrow. Everybody else, peace. Gotta go.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.